author Salman Rushdie remains in critical condition. Last Friday, he was about to speak at the Chautauqua Institution in New York on artistic freedom when attackers stabbed him repeatedly. His family says he suffered life-changing injuries, and Rushdie may lose an eye. For more than three decades, Salman Rushdie has been under a death threat issued by the Ayatollah in Iran. It came after his book, The Satanic Verses, came out. He spent a decade after that threat in hiding, but ever since, Rushdie has defended freedom of expression in public. Here he is, speaking in New York in 2010.
Comedy is a very good weapon. Tyrants always lock up the comedians first, because to be ridiculed is the worst fate. Satire and ridicule are what tyrants fear more than anything else, you know, to be made to look ridiculous.
Joining us now is a longtime friend of Salman Rushdie. Suzanne Nossel heads up Pen America, a group dedicated to free expression and human rights. Suzanne, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You were in communication with Salman Rushdie, I understand, in the hours just before the attack. How did he seem then?
He seemed fine. We were emailing about Ukrainian writers and how to bring them to safety at a safe haven in Pittsburgh with the individual who he was about to go up on stage with at Chautauqua. So he was trying to figure out who might avail themselves of this opportunity and focused, as he was so often, on endangered writers around the world and how to help them.
Yeah. Wow. And so have you been in touch with him since? Had a chance to get a sense of how he is or how his family is?
Yeah, my sense is it's difficult. You know, these were really serious injuries, as you say. His family's reported that they're life-altering. I think he faces a long and challenging road ahead. So I don't think one should minimize what he went through. This was a savage attack that did real harm.
Yeah. Can I ask you to kind of step back and tell us a little bit more about the book that prompted so much anger from the Ayatollah in Iran? You know, in our editorial meetings, there are some young people on our staff who don't know anything about this. I mean, why was the Satanic Verses so offensive, seen as so controversial in some quarters?
Well, I mean, it has to do with the sensitivity in Islam about depictions of the Prophet Muhammad. And in the Satanic Verses, Muhammad is a character. You know, some of the twists and turns may not portray him favorably. You know, but we've seen other incidents that have to do with visual depictions of the Prophet Muhammad triggering violence. So this is a kind of a sacrosanct thing that, you know, in at least a certain branch of Islam is viewed as kind of something you cannot touch, you cannot write about, you cannot depict visually. And if you do, that is grounds for violence. And in Salman's case, a fatwa or ordering his murder. And so, you know, that's what's at the root of this. You know, the book is a novel, so it's fictional. And, you know, in our view as Pen America, there's no work of fiction that could possibly be the basis for a violent reprisal.
Yeah. Now, being a man under a death threat for decades because of this decree from the Islamic government in Iran gave Salman Rushdie a kind of international notoriety as someone representing freedom of expression. He talked about this in a variety of venues, and here he is talking to graduating students in 2015 at Emory University in Atlanta.
Not all of human nature can be considered good, which is why most of the Ten Commandments tell us what we should not do. Not kill, not lie, so on. But the best of human nature is our innate understanding of and need for personal liberty. Nobody anywhere ever enjoyed being a slave. Everybody, everywhere, offered a chance of freedom, grasps it as a thirsty man seizes a drink.
Suzanne, why has he remained a public figure? Why is it so important to him? Has there been any ambivalence that he's voiced about kind of being such a public figure in this debate?
You know, I think it's a very unusual life to live. He wrote a memoir in 2012 called Joseph Anton, which was the pseudonym that he used when he was in hiding for all of those years, about the trauma and dislocation of having to be underground, having to move around from house to house, you know, being cut off from so many of his activities and associates for such a long period. And I think it's an enduring trauma, you know, but also one that he had in many ways surmounted. He was living a public life. You know, as long as I've known him, he's been out there at events, at parties, at readings, you know, just a very active and fearless person.
You have described him as a man who never flinched or faltered, a man of great humor. I mean, the person he is, despite this threat.
Yeah, he's very witty and eloquent and sort of a charming presence. He can be, you know, kind of bracing, you know, maybe a little bit acid-tongued from time to time. Yeah, he speaks his mind, but he's a very compelling speaker, and he's deeply passionate. I mean, I've been looking through some of our email exchanges over the years. You know, there was a time where a South African writer had quoted from his work, and she came under sort of withering fire from within the Muslim community in South Africa, and you know, ended up in a mental institution at the behest of her family and religious figures. And Salman was just so determined to get her freed, and he was mobilizing literary activists from all over the world and made it happen just over a couple of days. And it was just really quite extraordinary. She was not someone he knew. She was not someone famous, but she was suffering and he was absolutely by her side and determined to make it right.
Yeah. You know, the person you described, and it makes me think of other individuals who have been kind of caught up in this battle over words. One of the translators of his book, Satanic Verses, was murdered. A publisher was attacked. Does this go to the power of words?
It does. I mean, anyone who thinks sort of books are over with and it's all about TikTok, you know, they have it wrong. I mean, books are influential enough that there are 277 writers around the world who are in prison by our last count as a result of their words. And so, you know, words can spark transformation, revolution, you know, changes of ideology, and authoritarians recognize that. And, you know, writers, I think, have to come to grips with the power of their words and the risk of expressing themselves. And I think this has brought that home in a very potent way. You know, just how much words matter, how writing is an act of courage, you know, what it takes to tell stories others don't want to have heard.
Your group, PEN America, is planning a demonstration on the steps of the New York Public Library. What do you hope will come from the collective response to this brutal attack?
Yeah, well, tomorrow we will be gathering on the steps of the New York Public Library to read from Salman's work as a gesture of solidarity and connection to him and amongst ourselves. And, you know, we're at PEN America celebrating our centenary. We're 100 years old this year. And I think this event, my hope is this event and this horrific incident can be a kind of galvanizing fuel to power us into the next 100 years of waging these fights. Because whether it's book bans in school boards and libraries across the country, or bans on curriculum and what can be taught in higher education, or the rise of authoritarianism around the world, we have our work cut out for us. And we need all of the support and energy and gusto that we can muster. And Salman has been kind of a life force for that for a long time. And I hope that this inspires others to take up the mantle.
Suzanne Nossel is Chief Executive Officer of PEN America. Suzanne, thank you so much.
Thank you.